to the Chris Gilbertson Show, where we focus on the secrets of the extraordinarily successful, and I interview experts and multimillionaires in areas that will help you as an entrepreneur grow your business to the level and expertise that you're looking to for your business. And if you want to learn more about how to broadcast and showcase your message on a global level, make sure you head over to chrisgilbertson.com to learn more about the power of podcasting. And today, I am just so excited. I've got a phenomenal guest who has just an incredible background and accomplishments. And her name is Randi Tizer, and she's the CEO of AuthorOneStop.com. And the reason why I'm so excited to bring her on the show is because a lot of entrepreneurs have wanted to start and write a book. They've got a story within them, but they don't know how to get started. So we're going to definitely uncover a lot of those mysteries here with Randi. But just to help you understand her background, she kind of her tagline is she performs book at the appendix. Oh, I can't even say it. Randi, how do you say that?
Book appendectomies to get the book inside of you out.
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you for your help with that. I love it, though. And so she edits and ghostwrites books. Randi's pitched books to literary agents and publishers. She currently has 17 people under contract with different agents and publishers with her book. She's a dynamic speaker. She's a publishing coach and editor. She presents and talks for business organizations as well as the publishing industry. And Randi's team of editors are just phenomenal. She's responsible with over 30 New York Times best-selling books, which is just absolutely phenomenal. She's the author of Crappy to Happy, which was featured in the movie Eat, Pray, Love. If you're familiar with Julia Roberts' starring role in that movie. Also, she's the author of The Power of Miracle Thinking and The Mind, Body, Spirit Speaker's Dictionary. So I'm just so excited to bring Randi on the call because she can share so much insight for you as an entrepreneur, no matter where you are in the world, to help you get your message out. So without further ado, Randi, welcome to our show. Thank you so much for coming on board here. And I'd like to just start with asking you, because I know you work with so many different experts and professionals all across the board, what do you think is the best place to first start as an entrepreneur, business owner, or someone who wants to write a book?
Well, the whole purpose of writing your book, I assume, is because you want to use this book for your career. And a book is absolutely the best way to go to improve your career, to get on bigger stages, to get more publicity. I mean, all this magic and miracles happens when you write a book. So I would like to really address that first, of like what's really possible. Because people really don't know what can happen. And one of the things that I did some years ago, actually it was back in 2005, an author came to me. It was her first book, and she was an entrepreneur in sales, and she wasn't even sure she was going to stay in her particular profession because things were just kind of, you know, piddling along. Then all of a sudden, I took her book. I sold it to a publisher. The book was featured in a Time supplement. It went out to 2 million readers. And thereafter, this author was able to say, yes, I was featured in Time. You were featured in Time? All of a sudden, she started getting speaking engagements all over the country to the point where a person such as she, who was completely unknown, all of a sudden is on stage with Susie Orman at the Moscone Conference Center in downtown San Francisco, and now she's on stages across the world. She just told me just this past week that she's received two major awards, one a global award. I mean, just these things never would have happened without that book. So that's a really powerful reason as to why to write the book.
Right. No, that's absolutely phenomenal. Congratulations on that. That's so exciting. Now, I think there's a topic kind of in especially in the personal development arena. Do you think more of having a book is more of a business card, or is there other reasons why to have a book out there today?
It's absolutely a business card, but the leverage just doesn't stop there. And so, for example, that one particular author, her book was picked up by Time, the Time magazine. But I have another author right now whose book is under contract with the publisher right now, and the publisher came back with a second contract. This man is a naturopath, and the publisher came back and said they wanted to do a line of private label vitamins and supplements in his name.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, you have
no
idea the magic and miracles and the new doors and the new possibilities that can open up with a book.
Oh, that is fantastic. Yeah, absolutely. That is so exciting. Now, I know you folks, and one of your other taglines is kind of, you know, there's a book you want to write, and there's a book a publisher and a reader will buy. And so you always ask, is that really the same book that you're trying to write? So what's really hot and what's really not when it comes to writing a book?
It's funny that, you know, you should say that, because some years ago, just about 3 or 4 years ago, when I was pitching books to publishers, I go to New York to the giant annual trade shows, and I'm sitting with the publishers, I'm sitting with agents, and I'm pitching. So I get to hear exactly what they're looking for. And I was hearing this term I had never heard before. And you could tell me if you've ever heard this term, and you probably haven't. But what I was hearing was the term that publishers were looking for female centric business books. They saw the women's business market, because there are so many entrepreneurs coming up who are women. Women are, you know, stepping up more and more to start
right.
businesses.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was starting to hear publishers saying, yeah, we're looking for female centric business books. I had one that fit the bill at that time. You know, it's a book that addresses women in business, their
right.
needs. And so, you know, I had one book at that time, sold it immediately. And so 2 years later, I had another, just a really hot female-centric business book. I'm going, oh, God, this is a no-brainer. I can get this one sold. And I go back to the giant book show, and guess what? The Barnes & Nobles, which are, you know, the major book-buying bookstore, found that they couldn't sell the female-centric business books in the big volume that they thought they were going to be able to sell. And all of a sudden, female-centric business books were out. And the
wow.
new in are books that appeal to both men and women in business. Now, here's a really hot tip for anybody who is writing to a business audience for entrepreneurs. I was sitting with the acquisitions editor and acquisitions editors are the people who acquire books for the different publishers. So I'm sitting with the acquisitions editor over at McGraw-Hill. As you know, major, major publisher, big player,
major.
Big business publisher. And I'm sitting with the acquisitions editor, and I'm pitching my line of my different clients' books that are appropriate for McGraw-Hill. And he tells me that books that have the title Entrepreneur do not sell anywhere near as well as books with the title Home-Based Business Owner or Homegrown Business. So either Home-Based Business or Homegrown Business. Those titles are going to sell a lot more than books that have the word entrepreneur in the title. So I started thinking, like, why? And all of a sudden, it just really dawned on me that a lot of people who are leaving corporate America, they've been downsized, they're unemployed, wherever they come from, so many more people are starting businesses now, but they don't yet see themselves as entrepreneurs. They haven't
right.
embraced that yet, but they certainly have a home-based business. They certainly have a homegrown business. Those are terms they're more likely to use in searches on Google when they're searching for books and products to help them to build their businesses.
Wow, that is phenomenal advice, because just one word can make or break you with your branding. So that's phenomenal. Now, do you see with the trends for it's still in that male-female home-based business
yes.
space, are there any other more kind of fine-tuned niches that you see that are
yes.
kind of okay,
yes,
perfect.
I want to address this. I, you know, I have a list here in front of me so I don't forget to say them all, my what's hot and what's not list. So business books in general are always hot. Easiest sell out of any possible book that can be sold to a publisher, easiest book for me to get placed with top literary agents would be any kind of business book. So, for example, right now, two of my clients have their books through publishers, you know, who I found for them, where both of these books are in every FedEx office around the country. So you write a business book, there, I mean, again, here's another opportunity, you know, FedEx office buys 3,000 copies of each book, and one of them was just also picked up nationally by Office Max.
Wow.
Very, very cool positioning for both authors. Okay,
absolutely.
So I'd like to share my what's hot and what's not list in all kinds of categories.
Okay.
So business books in general, yes, very hot. Werewolves are out. So many people are writing fantasy now. What I hear directly from the agents, the publishers are not looking for werewolf novels. anything, ixnay on the werewolf, yes.
Right.
Anything trendy is in. Books on weight loss, dealing with stress, books on how to get hired in today's economy. So anything that's going to address major trends that are they're currently in the media, those books are in. Bullying, books on bullying, clearly. That's a really hot topic. I have one author placed right now with a bullying book. I had three different publishers offer contracts for her, and my author is 12 years old.
I was just going to ask, would that be for different age range, like maybe a corporate workplace or when you're young?
Could be. It could
be.
Okay. But I have a 12-year-old, Shania Fastia, under contract with a major publisher right now, and she created an anti-bullying curriculum, and she has spoken to close to 100,000 children already. She goes to schools and gets up on stage in front of 100 or 1,000 people at a time and shares her anti-bullying message. So she's a kid talking to kids. Publishers love that.
Perfect. Okay.
Schools love it. Yes.
Yeah,
romance is huge. Oh, my God. Get me those steamy romance novels, please. I have publishers contacting me, asking me for romance. And fantasy escapism is always in, but it always, with any of these categories, I really want to say that the writing has to be really, really good.
Right.
And, you know, I have a team of editors who work for me who are the top, I consider to be some of the top talent in the entire country. Because, I mean, my editors are the people I've hired are the people who have edited all of these books that have sold, you know, to publishers that have become New York Times bestsellers in every genre, in every category. So, you know, if you write it and we can polish it, woohoo! let's get these books sold.
Yeah, let's get them out there. That is awesome insight. And just it's so great to know those niches that are what's popular and where to focus. So what are the most essential sales tools that you need in order to sell your book, your manuscript to a publisher? I mean, how do you set that up when you're working with your clients?
First, I am going to assess whether I believe the project is sellable. That's just like, you know, the number one thing that I'm looking at. And how I base this kind of criteria, there's basically five questions that publishers ask regarding every single manuscript. And one of those questions is the topic current, which obviously, you know, I was just talking about, and, you know, something, is it addressing a trend? So then another thing they're going to ask is your book different than every other book already out there on the subject matter? And this is very crucial to the sale of the book because we have to actually prove the sale of your book to a publisher. We have to show how your book is different and therefore better because you have to bring something new to the conversation. So, for example, as you know, since The Secret, for example, came out, there were a whole lot of books that came out right after it. I call them the Law of Attraction knockoffs. Mm-hmm. But every single one of them, in order to be published, had to differentiate in some way. They had to bring something new to the conversation. Another thing that publishers will ask are themselves, will readers be interested in this? What is the size of the market? They're going to want to know that. And that's another thing that we actually have to prove on paper. We have to show real statistics in a book proposal that we help authors create. And we have to prove the sale of the book. We have to talk about the primary target market. Because if somebody says everybody's their target market, publishers will roll their eyes and they'll move on to the next project.
Right.
They'll say, you haven't done your homework. You don't really understand what market demographics are. So we actually have to identify who is the primary market. For example, somebody walks into a bookstore. There's millions of books they can choose from. Who is the exact person who walks up to the shelf that your book is on and picks up your book? We have to be able to identify that person, and statistically, if possible. So I usually identify a primary market, a secondary market, and I call it the general catch-all, that it's called the tertiary market.
Right.
So, you know, and we help our authors to do this, to put these book proposals together.
Hi there, you're listening to The Chris Gilbertson Show. I'm Chris, and this is Secrets of the Extraordinarily Successful with my live interview with Randy Pizer, who is a phenomenal book agent, ghostwriter and has an incredible team to assist you in making your dream of making your first book happen or to help you publish more books. I just wanted to quickly share with you, if you're looking for a way to reach an affluent market, if you're looking for a fun way to have your message out and get more speaking gigs, reach a larger audience, reach more people, make more sales, and have more fun, I encourage you to head over to Chris Gilbertson, that's Chris with a K, chrisgilbertson.com, to learn more about the power of podcasting for your business and how it can truly help you gain so much more exposure and credibility as an expert speaker, coach, and of course, the topic of the hour, an author. And definitely this could be a great strategy for you to help increase your book sales exposure and the magnitude of your message. So again, head over to chrisgilbertson.com and we're going to head right back into Randy Peiser's interview about how to get yourself published.
Do you suggest for the new author or maybe someone who's just getting started writing their book to connect with you before they get it all done? Because I've seen people that have written a book and then they kind of do it backwards. I mean, what's the process that they should be going through to be successful at publishing their book?
I intercept manuscripts from wherever they are. I've worked with people who have had an idea through people who come to me with a completed manuscript and everything in between. So I have to consider the entire project to figure out whether I believe a publisher is going to say yes to it. A lot of that is based on what I know publishers are looking for now, because I have top publishers who send me their list of what they are looking to acquire. That's one thing. The agents, I work with so many top agents. I know typically what they are looking for. Some have sold books to film. I mean, many actually have sold books to film. But even recently, not one of my memoirs, but one of the agents who I pitched to just sold a memoir to film. So I really have to analyze the project. I love it. I mean, in an ideal world, in a perfect world, if somebody could come to me with their idea before they had written one word, that's really ideal. I would love to do, you know, a book consultation with somebody to let them know, do I think a publisher is going to go for this?
Right.
And the information and the feedback I'm giving is provided largely because the agents talk to me and the publishers talk to me, and I've sat with them over the years, so I hear this, not that, that, not this. Oh, this is your idea? You know, if you tweak this in this direction, a publisher is going to be interested. So I love to be able to sit with somebody and let them know that kind of information.
Yeah, that's fantastic, because I know I've done a lot of things wrong in business where I've gone the opposite way, so this is great to hear in the book world to have it, because then you know how to craft the deal, you know, specifically for the publishers to be able to, you know, maximize the success of the book. Now, my question in the publishing world, because it's a very different world than what I'm used to, and the contracts can take a little bit longer. So is there a specific process on how to get the attention of an agent to make sure that they're looking at the book now? I mean, here's my question. Let me just back. Well, I'll let you finish that one if you got my question there.
Actually, you know, I was on a panel last year with a, you know, top agent. She goes for 6- and 7-figure advances, even in a publishing world where they're not common anymore, but that's her range. And she says that most agents get about 1,500 manuscripts a month, 1,500.
Wow.
So there's no way, typically, that a new author is going to get an agent to just click on their email or to open their snail mail and look at that query. It's not typical. Doesn't mean it doesn't happen, but the odds are low. They're very, very low. So I want to also say that I was sitting with a publisher just a few years ago who told me he gets 10,000 submissions a year. And I'm thinking, you know, it's roughly 850 a month. And again, they don't have the time. They don't have the mental capacity to be reviewing one thing after the next. So who are they most likely to interact with? People with whom they already have working relationships.
Right.
So, for example, and unless you can use some other kind of leverage, for example, if I'm going to approach a new agent or publisher, and I sent out a query, for example, yesterday for a memoir that I'm working with. You know, we edited the memoir. I have it placed in a few places right now, a few publishers who are considering it. And all three publishers who I've approached in the last 2 weeks with this manuscript, including the one yesterday, every single one of them asked to see the manuscript within 24 hours.
Oh, wow. Wow.
And that's pretty typical.
Okay.
Why? They don't know me, but in my query line, I can write, query, colon, from editors of 30 New York Times bestsellers. Now, do you think that email's going to get open?
Absolutely.
Yes.
That's like probably 100% open rate.
Right. Right. Now, so, for example, one of my editors who works for me is a former publisher at Simon & Schuster.
Wow.
When I say, you know, the top of the line people are working with me, the top of the line people are working with me.
So then they want it. Now, so that kind of goes into my second part of the question. Is it when people come to you and you're pitching these, do they have to have the manuscript already pretty much finished? It sounds like it, really, essentially, with how you do the connections you have.
We edit first.
Okay.
And I make sure everything is stellar and polished and ready to go. Because when I pitch, and when I'm thinking about an agent who receives 1,500 manuscripts a month, just the promise of looking at it down the road doesn't cut it for me.
Okay.
I want them to say, yes, yes, yes. Here's, you know, I've got their attention. They've said yes, they want to consider it. Here's the manuscript. Go.
Perfect.
So now it used to be in the publishing world that it was okay in nonfiction to write a proposal and 2 to 3 sample chapters, maybe 35 to 50 pages of text, and submit it. In fact, we're doing that. I have an agent who's doing that right now with one of my clients. But I really, really don't recommend it because so many people are coming in, so many agents are coming in with their clients' projects, and they're polished, they're ready to go. So who is a publisher going to consider? An author who has no track record of sales, and this is their first book, or somebody whose book is totally polished, ready to go, here it is. So that's
Absolutely.
Why I really don't recommend, like, just the, you know, send sample chapters and pray. You know, I don't recommend
right.
that.
No, that makes sense. It's the level of professionalism and seriousness you are about, you know, the level you want to play at. So that's outstanding advice. Now, how do you get cover endorsements when you don't know anybody famous? Because, you know, a lot of books, they always have, you know, 5, 6, 10 endorsements on the back, regardless of where they are at in the publishing world. So I'd love to learn your secrets or tips on that.
Yes, in fact, I have some really good tips for that. The question to ask, and this is my secret question, the secret sauce of getting endorsements. I tell people, what is it that you can give rather than what is it that you can get or want? Because I was talking with, you know, a best-selling author, and she told me that she gets 150 solicitations a month for endorsements. Like, you know, if you figure how busy you are in your day, how busy I am in my day, and how busy all of your listeners are in their days, who has time to be wading through other people's work? Nobody. I mean, really. And so what I say is the real secret formula is what can I get, what can I give? And so, for example, I write for magazines. So I might interview a best-selling author, and at the end of the interview with them, because I'm writing an article for them, I'll say, oh, you know, and by the way, I have a book coming out. You know, would you be willing to provide an endorsement? And of course they are, because I've just given to them. That's leverage. Now, if you're not in a position where you're writing magazine articles, which is going to be the majority of people listening, can you volunteer for their events? Do you have a large enough newsletter list where you could offer to get the word out to your list about their latest and greatest, whatever they're doing?
Right.
What can you use as your own personal leverage? Now, that doesn't mean that you still can't go up to somebody at an event and ask them, but I'm saying if you have leverage, you have something to give, your chances of getting an endorsement are much greater.
Yes, and that's just phenomenal business advice in general. So thank you for sharing that. Now, I'm curious, what do you think are the biggest mistakes that authors make in this cycle of getting their book published?
Well, there are a number of mistakes that people commonly make because they just don't know. They're just not in the publishing industry. Never tell a publisher in your proposal or speaking that you know your book is going to be a bestseller. You don't know that.
Right.
You're not in their shoes. Your book's going to be a New York Times bestseller. I was so sure. My first book, Crappy to Happy, the one you mentioned that was featured in Eat,
right.
Pray, Love, I was sure. This book is hysterical. It's so funny, and it's so right on. It's going to inspire so many people, and it's going to be a New York Times bestseller, and that's my dream, and I know I'm in my own right alignment, and I'm going to make this happen. And guess what? It did inspire lots of people, and it helped people all over the world. I got emails and letters from people all over saying how much that book helped them and how it affected them. It even saved some people's lives. But did it become a bestseller? It did for my publisher, but not as a New York Times bestseller. You just don't know.
Right, exactly.
So, you know, don't make claims that you can't back up now. Another big mistake authors make, I call it mentioning pie in the sky connections. And what I mean by this is, you know, I know somebody who knows Oprah. It's just like, no, unless the connection is really secured, don't mention your pie-in-the-sky connections.
Right.
And the third thing, this is really, really critical. I really want everybody to hear this. I will do X, Y, or Z once the book comes out. So those are like, you know, your future plans. As soon as the book comes out, I'm going to start speaking. You know, I can travel. I can do this. I can go run seminars. Publishers are looking for people who have the eyeballs now.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to show that in the proposal. We have to show how many eyeballs you have on you and on your work.
Right.
Because who is it? You know, the publishers are looking to you to sell the book as much as they're going to sell the book. You're their partner with them in selling that book. So, for example, I'm sure you've heard of, you know, Wiley & Sons, major business publisher.
Mm-hmm.
I had a book with an agent just last year and actually did get it under contract with a different wonderful business publisher, but not Wiley. But the Wiley publisher came back and was asking some questions regarding the proposal. And some of the things they asked included, what is the size of this author's newsletter list? What is the size of their social media following? You know, I had an agent who was talking with me recently. We had like an hour-long conversation just last month, and he was telling me that the publisher sits with the book buyer at Barnes & Noble, and they get their calculators out, and they start running numbers. They are running real numbers, and there's lots of numbers they're looking for, and I know what those numbers are, and I make sure that we get those numbers into the proposals. And if somebody doesn't yet have the big publicity platform they're looking for, I want to help them to get there. Once somebody's working as a client with me, I'm telling them and showing them what to do. There are many tricks and techniques to build audiences quickly.
That's fantastic. And it's almost like a mini business plan you're helping authors with at the same time, really, in growing their business. So that's outstanding. Now, you've talked a lot about making your book stand out. What are some tips that you can help listeners with on how to make that book pop and stand out for agents as well as yourself when you're looking to critique and work with?
I call it factor. When I'm pitching anybody's project, whether it's in person via email or email, I'm looking for the eyebrow factor, which in my mind is what can I say or do? What is the hook that I can provide within one or two sentences that gets an acquisitions editor or publisher to raise their eyebrow? I want their interest. What's that?
I said I like that. I love
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I call it the eyebrow factor. And I'm really, really, really good at pitching. I mean, that's why I have like 16 or 17 now with different agents and publishers.
Mm-hmm.
And so that pitch, that hook, can be anything. It can be about the book or it can be about the author themselves.
Very interesting. Okay, excellent. Now, since you've been in this industry and you're going to the events, you're pitching the publishers, I mean, what are the big questions to ask the publishers to help them make a buying decision?
Well, the questions that the publishers are going to ask are the ones, you know, that I was referring to earlier. And the biggest question they're going to ask, there's two things. They want to know that, first, that there's interest in your topic, but then they also want to know the size of your publicity platform. And that's what the big buzzword in the whole publishing industry is called, platform.
Okay.
So if you're not out speaking, start. start in your living room with your friends, but just start. Start going at Toastmasters. Do whatever you can to be getting more and more comfortable about getting up in front of people. Start getting in other people's teleseminars. If you have friends who run teleseminars, ask them if you can be a guest. And now here's another secret that I would like everybody to start doing. To please, with your name and on your materials that you send out everywhere, put that your name and then put comma, author of the upcoming book, and then list the title or the tentative title of your book. Even if you haven't written one word, just start pitching. You're starting to pitch yourself. You're going to start to build the audience. You're going to start to build name recognition around a book.
Oh, that's awesome advice. It just sets it up, and you're already pre-selling and setting yourself up with that expert status. So that's outstanding.
Yes. And certainly get your email list going, because that's going to, and I'm sure, Chris, that you advise that to people all the time anyway. You know,
right.
For years I've heard, you know, your list is your gold, your list is your gold. And I would say, yeah, that's nice, but I'm too busy, but I don't know how to do that, but it costs money, but this, but that. And the truth is, once I really got my list in place and started sending out a monthly email, I discovered that my list was my gold and that people will respond. And I started going, oh, my God, why wasn't I doing this years ago?
Right. Oh, is there one medium that the publishers prefer more for, you know, the eyeball exposure for, you know, is it speaking or is it?
I would say that speaking is social media list is equally as important.
Okay.
But speaking, absolutely. You know, the publisher at Wiley came back to me and said, and again, these were their particular criteria. They said, where has the author spoken in the last year? What was the size of each audience? And where is the author speaking in the next 6 to 12 months? And what is the projected size of each audience? So they're serious about numbers. And, you know, you really called it, Chris, when you talked about a book as a business investment. For them, they're making a buying decision, and they want to know if this investment in your book is going to, you know, result in profits for them.
Absolutely.
So they're very clear about the numbers. Now, here's what I tell people: if you don't really have those big numbers, if you can self-publish a book and really build your numbers in the process, then I can take that book or your next book and bring it to a publisher, because then you've had a chance to prove sales.
Perfect. That's great advice. Now, do you think that for the publishers wanting to know the future, you said not to say, like, you want to have it set up prior to and with that pitch with the publisher, but do you advise to say, okay, I've got these speaking events lined up, or putting that in the proposal, is that important, or how do you suggest going about doing that?
Yes, that's exactly what we do. There's different sections of the proposal. In the publicity section, we will list all the upcoming speaking engagements and the projected size of each audience.
Is every publisher looking for something different, or are they all kind of looking around the same trends right now?
The only thing the publisher cares about is which of these books is going to make me the most money. That's
Perfect.
Their bottom line.
Yep.
So sometimes, yes, they are looking for very specific topics. I remember, you know, a couple years ago, Bloomberg, I was speaking with them at, you know, Giant Book Show, and they were looking for books on hydrogen cars. So, again, that was another trend.
Right.
So, there's different publishers looking for different things. Parenting books are always hot. I mentioned some of those other categories. In business, I would say, you know, where is the pain point right now that most people have? What do they need? Well, obviously, social media and how to do it is very, very big.
Exactly.
So books about, you know, how to sell more online, I'd say those books are very strong. I mean, one of my authors, that's one of the books that I have in every FedEx office around the country. Her first book was on, that book was on social media, and the publisher offered her a second contract on a new book that she's done on online marketing. Again, they're all related.
That's outstanding. Wow, just so exciting. Just the possibilities are endless, and the exposure, it's a ripple effect. It just keeps going and going and going. Now, you've given a lot of great, great advice and a lot of tips, but I'd love for you to share kind of more insight on why having an agent is so important in this process, and maybe some of the pitfalls that people don't understand by not having an agent.
The primary purpose of the agent is either to sell the book and especially to...
We had a little technical difficulty, but Randy was saying here the most important part for having an agent is to, one, to sell the book, and then also to negotiate the agreement and contract with the publisher to make sure that you're protected on your rights. And she'll go into that in detail here.
My first book contract was back in about 2001. That was for my Crappy to Happy book. And it was single-spaced, something like 9 pages of an 8-point font. And there's no way to understand, as a new author, if you're not a literary lawyer or an agent, there's no way that you understand what you are signing or whether you're getting a good deal or a bum deal or whether that contract has red flags in it or not. Are you signing away all of your what's called your subsidiary rights, your electronic rights, foreign rights? You just don't know. So even when I find somebody, an agent or a publisher directly, or especially, I mean, with the publisher, because an agent's already going to negotiate the contract. But if I pitch the book directly to a publisher, because I have access to so many of them, and they, when they come back with the contract, I introduce my clients to an agent who will negotiate the contract at just like an hourly rate. Because you want to know that you're protected. You know, I'm not an agent. I don't do the legalese. I'm the
Absolutely.
Big pitch gal. You know, I'm very good at pitching, but I don't do the legalese.
Right. Well, it's very important to have each aspect of it because that is so crucial because you could spend all that time and then have no rights to anything afterwards. And especially now
That's
with
true.
So many different mediums, with Kindle and Amazon and all the different ways that we can now distribute that, that's a very, very valid point. Now,
yes, it is.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, can you share any stories? I'd love to hear some more of your success stories with some of your books because you just have such a phenomenal repertoire of people that you've worked with. I think it'd be great to share a few more insights.
Thank you. Yeah, I have, I have many people under contract right now. I should actually just look on my website to see Wendy Ida, just lovely, lovely gal, has a fitness book. I had her under contract with an agent. Agent didn't sell the book. I took the book back and sold it myself. And
wow.
She was with a top agent. Wendy's book. I'm just, you know, trying to think. I have to actually just look on the homepage of my site. I have a long list of people who I currently have under contract right now. Oh, yeah. And some are going to indie publishers. There's a lot of award winners. David Cowper, here's another guy. He came to me with a book. Now, it's interesting because I'll bring up about titles, too. He came to me with a book that was called Successful Misfits. And it's about people who, you know, they worked within companies and they just didn't fit in. They were the proverbial square pegs and, you know, with the round holes. And I said, you know, that title identifies who the person is, but I can never get a publisher to buy that book. And that's based on publishers, you know, direct feedback, because the publishers have told me that people don't like to identify themselves with a negative connotation.
Ah, yeah.
Even if they relate to it.
Right.
And so I retitled that book Outsiders on the Inside. Then, you know, we sold that.
I like that. That's great. Yeah. See, it's just
yes.
It's the little details that make all the difference. And so, I mean, that's a big point. I'd love for you to talk about the title because I know there's certain titles that grab me and I resonate with, and it's within all of our marketing. It's a skill set that definitely needs to be mastered. So what are some tips that you have on how to have, you know, pick the right title for your book to maximize the sales potential of the book?
Well, obviously, the title is very important as part of that eyebrow factor that I talked about earlier. And the
right.
truth is, don't fall in love with your title because it might not be the title for your book by the time your book comes out. So consider your title, no matter how great and fantastic you think it is and how witty and wonderful, consider it a tentative title because ultimately it is the marketing departments from each of these publishers who decide what your title is going to really be. And the same thing with your cover art. Because you don't have any say typically in your cover art. And I want to give you some examples of this. My first book, when I pitched it to a publisher, it was called From Crappy to Happy, A Journey Out of the Pits and Into the Fruit of Life. So the publisher, when it was sold, took the from, they took out my preposition, it became Crappy to Happy, Small Steps to Big Happiness Now. Because again, every book has to address the question of what's in it for me. Even if you're writing a memoir, what's in it for the reader? Think from
exactly.
their perspective, not from your perspective. So they saw small steps to big happiness now as part of, you know, that was, that's what would help sell the book, which was really true.
Yeah, that, wow. It's just, yeah, again, those little things that could just turn it. And I think that's a really good principle too in business anyway, that we need the market to tell us how things can change in our business. And I think that's a really good mindset to have in anything in business, whether you know your traditional brick and mortar or anything. Make sure that you're letting the market tell you and make those changes accordingly. So don't fall in love with it, create the product. So I love that advice. That's just phenomenal. Now, do you have any other insights or any other secret sauce tips for, you know, new authors or authors
yes,
to be or
yes.
published authors?
Yes. I want to say a little bit more about titles. In either your title or your subtitle, I really want to encourage you to do some keyword searches and get some real keywords into your title somewhere, because people are clicking on search terms. Right, they're going to Google or Bing or wherever, and they're putting something in a search box. What are people searching that your book comes up when people are searching? And you don't want to choose a title that has 500,000 or a million searches every single month, because your book's just going to be found on page 100 of Google, not on that first page. So you've got to be careful. You know, I tell people, if you can find, you know, 200,000 or 100,000 searches or less, you know, your chances of coming up more towards the top of a Google search are going to be greater.
Absolutely.
And, you know, where do you go to check these terms? You know, I tell people, just go to Google, just in a regular Google box, type in keywords. The first thing that's going to come up is the Google keyword link to their AdWords. Now, you don't have to pay for their AdWords program, but you can go on that site and you can put in any term you want to search on, and Google's just going to spit out a long list of search terms about what people are searching on, all the related searches, the global searches, the local searches or recent searches, and you can just see.
Absolutely. It just provides ideas for you too. Excellent.
You know, I want to share with you – oh, what's that?
Nope, keep going.
Oh, okay. I wanted to share with you. You know, sometimes people write on subjects and I think, how the heck am I going to refer this? But, you know, I had one a few years back, and this man had written this book about sword fighting. And I'm thinking, how to sword fight for beginners? Oh, my God, is this a tough sell or what? But the truth is, I found a publisher for it at the major trade show, the major publishing industry trade show where I go every single year. I found a publisher for it who specialized in martial arts books for beginners. And this guy's book, The Beginner's Guide to the Longsword, got picked up. The publisher was thrilled. So
that's outstanding. Well, you know, and I love your creativity to be able to figure out a way to make it work. And you tweak it so it makes it happen, and how these authors can get the deal, can get the publishers, get their message out there, and then, you know, get the praise and the recognition that they deserve. So just thank you for sharing such phenomenal insight, just really incredible nuggets of information that are just phenomenal for, you know, business owners, as well as being able to obviously publish a book and get their message out there. So where can we find out more about you, Randy?
My website is www.authoronestop.com. AuthorOneStop.com is my website, and anybody could just jump on the website, and right in the corner there I've got my email link, my phone number right in the upper right-hand corner, so people can contact me. Now, I also created a Write a Book program, and it's specifically for people who want the big business card, people who want to position themselves as an expert by writing a book, and I have different formats in it that are books that publishers buy, that readers buy. And it doesn't matter whether you're writing like a how-to, like a steps book, or a problem-solution format, or if you want to, maybe you've overcome things in your life and you want to inspire others by your life's journey. There are specific formats that readers are going to buy and that publishers are going to buy. And so I created the Write a Book program to show the exact formats that I've sold.
Oh,
I really want to make this easy for people.
Right.
So, and that is a product. You know, if anybody's interested, I do offer a full money back guarantee on it. Because, you know, I believe in it. You know, I just had somebody who just emailed me just a couple days ago, your Write to Book program is wonderful. I'm going to have the book, you know, for you within a week or two. And he just bought it last month. I think that's really cool.
That's outstanding.
Oh, yeah, that's
fantastic.
Really cool.
Fantastic. Well, Rainey, thank you so much for coming on the show. Again, this is Rainey Pizer, CEO of AuthorOneStop.com.
If you've always wanted to write a book or you just are looking to learn how to get published, head over to chrisgilbertson.com to learn more about Rainey Pizer and how she can help you get your book out into the marketplace. So again, head over to chrisgilbertson.com and go out and make it a great day.